I'm Katie McGrady, and this is Ave Explores. I think we sometimes limit our perspective of Lent. Lent is 40 days. It ends with the sacred Triduum, the three highliest holy days of our Catholic Church year. And then we enter into Easter. Yay! Bunnies and eggs and chocolate and pastel colors. But if we limit Lent, which we do, we have a limiting sense at times. If we limit Lent to a 40-day spiritual boot camp, some sort of self-help regimen, then we actually, I think, end up limiting Easter. Now, I realize it might be a little weird to talk about Easter in just the first week of Lent. We've barely gotten started, Katie. Slow your roll. I, for one, have already gotten things ready for Easter goodies. Started planning the menu, figuring out what time we're going to go to Mass on Easter Sunday, probably 9 a.m. as usual. Got the dresses picked out for my daughters. I have to find something nice and bright for myself. And I ordered my husband a nice new pastel blazer. I'm sure he's going to love it. But see, sometimes we think of Easter as like, okay, I have to do all these things, prepare a meal, pick our outfits, get things together for Easter baskets, dye the eggs, and then hide them. Because we're a tactile people who know that there are things we want to do. There's stuff associated with that particular celebration. So we do that to Lent. Okay, well, Lent has prayer and fasting and almsgiving. So these are the things I'm going to do. Here's my list. Lent has ashes and dirt and lots of purple and gray and maybe a handful of candles and parish missions. Can't forget those. Oh, and reflection books. And so the same way that sometimes we think of Easter as the finish line, in order to cross the finish line, we have to do all these things to get there. And then we get to do all these things in Easter. And we limit Lent and Easter to just these tactile external experiences of things that we've done, maybe goals that we've achieved because of these self-help activities that we've engaged in of a spiritual nature. And don't forget the Cadbury eggs. Now, maybe joking aside, maybe that's not your experience of Lent. Maybe Lent isn't actually limited in your mind. Okay, 40 days, got to get through it, got to do all these things. Maybe Lent is expansive in the sense of, I'm going to try all these things and we're going to see which one sticks, like throwing pasta at the wall to see if it's finished just yet. I've only done that one time. It didn't work. For the record, the pasta was not all the way cooked. Maybe we can find a happy medium between too much for Lent or too little for Lent. Maybe we can figure out a different way of thinking of Lent rather than just a spiritual boot camp, a spiritual self-help program, and instead look at Lent as an opportunity to think about what's next. It's one of my favorite things about Father Agostino's book, Made for Heaven. Yes, it's to walk us through the 40 days of the Lenten season, but it's to make us think about eternity. And a book that can lead me to a place of thinking about my eternal salvation, about being in the presence of God, hopefully forever, worshiping Him in heaven, to begin to dream and plan and long for and live like that is what I'm made for, isn't always that easy to do, but the Lenten season actually is the perfect time to do it. And not just because I want to spiritual boot camp myself into holiness. We talked a little bit last week about these habits that lead us to holiness, but because I recognize that Lent is actually 40 days to reset my thinking, that this is not my home, that heaven is what I long for, and that even the celebration of Easter is merely to remind me, there's nothing mere about Easter, I should say, but is to get me to understand, to comprehend, to rest in the reality that Jesus Christ wants me to be with Him for eternity. Easter is a showcasing of that. Death has no sting anymore because of the resurrection of Jesus, which means our death is not some final act, but is merely a passing on to the next life with Christ. And while, yes, death is a sad thing, and we grieve those who have gone before us and maybe aren't running headfirst into our own, there's a reclaiming of it. And Lent is a time to prepare that reclaiming of Easter. And so maybe, I don't know, we could reclaim Lent too. That Lent is not just for getting ready for Easter. It's not just for the next 50 days that we'll celebrate, but that these 40 days now are to help me understand what Jesus transformed when He died on the cross and resurrected from the dead. And so therefore I can say, okay, what is He going to transform within me? Mark Hart and I have known each other for a very long time. I often like to remind Mark, he spoke at conferences I attended as a teenager, so he's no spring chicken. But we've become pals over the years. He's kind of like a big brother. We've worked together on stuff at SiriusXM. I have this one really beloved moment from NCYC in 2019. My husband flew in a day late because of school stuff that he had to do. And so when he landed at the Indianapolis airport, he needed to catch an Uber or a cab. And the cab line was super, super long. And an Uber was going to take like 10 or 15 minutes. And he really wanted to get there by the time the opening session began. I was hosting that year with Father Agustino Torres, the author of this year's book, Made for Heaven. And he's standing at the baggage claim and he's texting me. He was like, it looks like the cab line is really long. I'll have to wait for an Uber. And Mark Hart walked up and saw him and gave him a big hug. And we're old pals. And we had just that summer spent time together at the Life Teen Youth Ministers Convention that I'd spoken at. And so he gives Tommy this big, big hug. And he said, hey, man, how are you getting down to Lucas Oil and to downtown Indy? And Tommy said, I guess I'm just going to have to call an Uber and wait. And Mark was like, no, you can ride with us. I've got a rental car. And so he texted me. He said, I picked up your husband. Don't worry. He's coming. And I said, thank you so much. Like, I really, really appreciate that. It means that he'll be able to get to the start of the conference and I'll be able to see him before I go on stage for what was one of the biggest moments of my career. And Mark replied, family. You do it for family. And that's kind of how I've thought of him for a very long time. He's like a big brother. I feel like his little sister. He looks out for me. And it's always a great joy to get to visit with him. Because what Mark has to say, especially in this week's episode, is so critically important in the season of Lent. We're going to say it quite a bit over the course of this season. Lent is not self-help programming. It's not to-do listing our holiness. It's an invitation from Jesus to be closer to his heart so we can know him and recognize we're made to be with him for eternity in heaven. And that is no small project, but it's not one that we can just make some sort of task list. It's an embrace of a new life in Christ. And so this week, Mark Hart helps explain all of that and helps remind us that Lent is not just for Easter. So sit back and enjoy this conversation with Mark Hart here on Ave Explores. Mark Hart, welcome to Ave Explores.
Good morning, my friend.
It's good to see you. I'm always happy when I can bring on some of my favorite people onto the show. It was Sister Josephine, Father Agustino, and now you are like the first 3 weeks of Ave Explorers. So we're setting us up for great success. I want to kick off our conversation. I didn't give you any warning about what I was going to ask you first.
None.
Last year, we had you on at the beginning of our Lent podcast.
Right.
And asked you, I think we talked about fasting. Now here we are, almost a year later, probably like a little less than a year, because Lent is really early this year. And I want you to think back to 2023, and I want you to tell us how Lent went last year and what you're looking forward to for Lent this year.
Yes, Lent last year was abysmal. It did not go well.
Honesty. That's what you get on this podcast.
I had grand aspirations. I really did. I'm like, I'm going to give up this. I'm going to give up this. And this is going to happen. Wow. It went into the tank pretty quick. Mm-hmm. It was just a series of life. You know, it was sickness sweeps through the house, and then it was, you know, sickness. It was people at work, and you know, then people are out of work. With beautiful blessings, like, you know, those babies or whatever else. But it was just this mad dash where I was so excited. Ash Wednesday, and I'm walking out. I got it on my forehead. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna kill this thing. And 2 weeks in, I'm like, oh, sweet fancy Moses, like, what is happening right now? My whole life is just a debacle. It was long days, it was long weekends, and yeah, you know, like we were talking about before we started recording, man, you know, your kids, they're sick. I mean, once sickness hits the house and sweeps through, we got through that, and then all of a sudden someone had COVID again. I don't even know what happened. It was like going back in time. But I remember looking up at my wife at Palm Sunday Mass, and I looked over, I'm like, where did Lent go? What happened? You know, I mean, I think I've lost 5 pounds, probably more from stress than from fasting. I don't even know what's happened right now. And I mean, I had good Holy Week. Does that ever happen to you? You just kind of react to life, and you look up and you're like, what happened the last month and a half? And I'm looking forward to this. I almost don't want to say it out loud. I'm looking forward to this Lent almost as a do-over for last Lent. You know, I'm glad it's early this year. It is a little bit of like spiritual whiplash though. When, mm-hmm. you know, 1 minute you're singing, O come Emmanuel. And the next minute they're smearing ashes on your head. It's a little weird. And let's be honest, the church in their wisdom, Couldn't we move Ash Wednesday to a Thursday when it falls on Valentine's
Day? I know, right?
I think we could. The Pope's got, he's got a lot of pull, but you know, not here to complain.
This will air the first week of Lent. So we'll have had Super Bowl Sunday, Mardi Gras, and then Valentine's Day, all within like this first few days of Lent starting.
Which you really have to appreciate about all y'all down south. Because
I mean,
you
know, we just party.
I understand the Gregorian calendar and how it all happens and why Mardi Gras is where it is. But it's genius, right? It's
genius.
No, we're gonna Super Bowl Sunday. Everyone's gonna get sick on Monday. Then we're gonna have Mardi Gras.
Oh, but we're off. We're off for a week.
Our
schools close for a whole week. I mean, granted, our schools also close when it's like 20 degrees or if it's raining too hard. We just like we party around here. We're embracing the season.
It's the way to do it, though. It's the way
to
do it.
Yeah, we don't. I believe the phrase is we don't hide crazy. We parade it down the street. And I have a t-shirt that says that I proudly wear, especially if I have to travel around Mardi Gras. I just need everybody to know this is what we're doing. I love that word that you said, though, abysmal. And then how we have to sometimes react to the, what's the root of that word? The abyss. Like, I feel like Lent, we want to walk into the desert, but we know what's going to happen when we're in there and we don't really want to go. And so we sometimes fight kicking and screaming and then we're there. Not even really by our own choice. And so we just have to kind of react to it. How do we prevent just being reactive? What can we do to actually prepare? I don't want to say to do Lent, because I don't want Lent to turn into a to-do list of spiritual tasks, but how do we enter into it ready to not just be reactive, but to be proactive?
I think that's $1 million question. And it's hard because this is going to air after Lent's already started.
Early enough.
Yeah. Oftentimes the best Lents I've ever had began during ordinary time. In that I really took the time between myself or talking to the spiritual director or just maybe just talking to someone who's holier than me, which is basically the population of the country. Sometimes asking, hey, what are you going to do for Lent? Like, what are you giving up? What are you adding on? But really doing that daily examine, you know, and honestly, even if Lent's already started and I don't have to give up. I give up, you know, chocolate or coffee or whatever. But to even after a week or two of Lent started, to really, I pour into the daily examine. It's really, really important. And I started doing this years ago. And it's just completely changed my life. Is going to bed about 20 minutes before I'm falling asleep on the couch, right? And lying there and really working through the day. Where did I fail in virtue today as a husband? Where did I get snippy or short or impatient with my kids? You know, where as a boss, should I have been more pastoral or should I have been more understanding? The lady that cut me off in the parking lot of the grocery store. You know what I mean? What was my first inclination? You know, it's those little things in the daily exam where you really walk through your day and say, okay, Lord, reveal to me my shame. Mm-hmm. Reveal to me my failures. Reveal to me where I have fallen short of being a mini Christ, of being your love. And that really ought to inform what we proactively decide to do, to give up, to take on, to focus on during the 6-7 weeks of Lent. So even if Lent's already started, I would just encourage you, like, if you don't usually do a daily examine, try it, start, you know? And if you don't know where to start, you can go to Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 21. I mean, Romans is, you're like, St. Paul, use a comma, dude. I mean, come on, like you're a genius. But it's one of the more practical pieces, and Romans is heavy theology, but it's really practical and pragmatic. And he kind of just says, this is what a Christian looks like. This is how a Christian acts on a daily basis. That's what I would say is number one, is to start with that and let that inform what you do. Don't just let it be, you know, okay, every year I give up, you know, I give up alcohol. Every year I give up coffee. And sure, those things are wonderful. They're great spiritual practices and exercises. But let it go deeper than that, you know? Like if we say, is Lent about just spiritually and emotionally chastising myself, you know, and hurting myself? Or is it really about, I want to grow in sanctity? So Lord, I'm going to let you breathe into those cracks and crevices and those junk drawers of my soul that I intentionally keep junky, right? Because I just sort of say, well, you know, you have a junk drawer, but this is not a junk garage like that guy. This is not a, you know, a junk guest room like that girl. And he's saying like, that's great. You know, I'm proud that it's a drawer, not a room, but I still want to root through it. I still want to make you better, you know? And oftentimes we don't treat Lent like that, sadly, which is really the case. Where it is.
That image of the junk drawer, I recorded an episode that will air later in the season just yesterday. And we were talking about the junk closet and how we hide these things. But then Jesus is sometimes just, I heard Annie Hickman give this talk years ago. Like, we hide everything in the closet so that we can have Jesus over for dinner. And then we open up the closet to put like one last thing in there. And he's sitting right on top of all the mess. And he's like, actually, this is the room I wanted to come hang out in. And I mean, Jesus experienced that. It's not like the Lord is saying, hey, go do this thing that I've never done myself. Like, he went into the desert before he started his ministry. And I'm always so, you work in ministry. You've worked in ministry for a very long time in a lot of different capacities.
Easy, Tiger. 28 years ain't that long. I'm just kidding.
You spoke at conferences I went to as a teen, but now we're friends. Now we're friends. You're not just the guy on the stage, right?
It's true. I did.
We do Lent to prepare for something. It's not like Lent is just this standalone, okay, hey, great. Like, we all sacrificed. Good job, everyone. It's a preparation, just like Jesus went into the desert for preparation. I think sometimes we just say very blasé, oh yeah, we're preparing for Easter. But then like, none of us live Easter. It's just like, great, we can put some bunny decorations on the table. So like, Lent is this time of fortifying. We want to be prepared for it, so we're not just reactive in it. But then like, tell us, okay, but what is it that we're actually preparing for other than a nice family photo on Easter Sunday morning in a too crowded church with people who aren't going to be there the next week?
Well, that's another question. What are we preparing for in Lent? Death. We're preparing for death. I mean, obviously everybody loves Christmas. Who doesn't love Christmas, right? It's the best time of the year, man. It's like, I mean, Christmas got the decorations, you got the music, you got the everything, you got the, you know, the Easter. It's like, what do you get? You got Peter Cottontail, like you said. You got some peeps. You got some hard boiled eggs. Like, what? That's the best we can do. But truthfully, Lent is preparation for death, and Easter should be this celebration, this constant celebration that no matter how dark it gets, no matter how sinister my enemy, no matter how tempting, no matter how sinful, no matter how anything. And we echo this not just during Easter, but in the week that follows, God's mercy is bigger. Mm. And even though I am a horrible sinner, that I have a God who loves me so much that he would rather die the most gruesome death known in antiquity than risk spending eternity without me. And that, I mean, that reality is just, it's just mind blowing when you actually really stop and think about it. You know, it's just, it's a reality that you can't really, you can't wrap your head around, and you just have to try and wrap your heart around and say that, it's the dad who comes for you. You're orphaned and you're along the street, and an earthquake has happened and a tsunami is coming and explosions are everywhere. And you just stand there and you're helpless and you can't save yourself. And here comes your dad and he's running to save you, you know? And, Lent is that acknowledgement that there is a God and it's not me. And Easter's a celebration that God's coming for me. He's coming for me. And I don't know how many days I have left. I don't know how much air I have left in my lungs, but when I breathe my last, I know my dad, and my dad knows me, and he knows my name, and it's carved in his hand, as it says in Isaiah, and he's coming for me. And we're going to have a really, really, really good second act. That's why, you know, we always focus on how long Lent is, right? I mean, Katie, I never, ever, ever, I mean, I like red meat. I never crave a burger except for six times a year.
Right.
6 days a year, I crave a burger. And I'm driving by In-N-Out. I'm like, oh, that looks so good right now. It's always on Friday, right? The same reason you only ever crave Chick-fil-A on Sunday.
It's a marketing plan.
It is. Absolutely. It's genius. But we always focus on the sacrifice of Lent, the 6 weeks of Lent, you know? We never stop to pay attention that Easter goes seven. So it's like, I mean, and honestly, this is what y'all get like down in Louisiana. Like, you get the party idea. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to sacrifice and then we're going to party, right? I think sometimes we focus so much on the former of the sacrifice, we forget the latter of the celebration, you know? And I mean, people look at Easter like a day and you're like, no, it's not just a day, it's a season. Then we top off the season. Then we're hitting Ascension and we're hitting Pentecost and we're hitting Corpus Christi. And the church is like, feast, 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 because the church as a mom loves us enough to pull us really close and go, whack, pay attention.
I love that image of a dad coming for us. We recently watched, my sister was home for her home visit from postulancy, and she really wanted to watch the Chronicles of Narnia movies. She was like, I've just been craving them for some reason. And I was like, yeah, I mean, again, like, you crave a burger during Lent, you're a nun, you don't have TV. So now we want to watch these Chronicles. So my 6-year-old had never, she'd seen like the cartoon from like the 70s, which is fine, but not really nearly as engaging as the live action one from when I was a kid. And it was the part where Aslan has died. He's been killed by the White Witch. And Lucy and Susan go the next morning, essentially to dress his body, right? Not all that unlike the women who go to the tomb. And they discover the stone cracked, right? And then Aslan appears. And I'm watching my six-year-old. I've seen this 1,000 times. This is a comfort movie. I watch it frequently. It's like Lord of the Rings. You go back to it all the time. And I'm watching Rose's face, and her eyes are just big as saucers. And she turned to me and she says, "Mom, that's what Jesus did." And like instantly got the allegory. I said, "Oh, C.S. Lewis, what a genius. Like, he can write Christian allegory for even a child."
So good.
It's so good, right? And I think sometimes we forget that that's what we're getting ready for. Like, we don't see it with that childlike wonder anymore because it's so old hat. Ah, it's the Lent again. I mean, we started this conversation Lent last year, now Lent this year. Like, we know it's going to come around. It's almost like we've got endless Lents.
And the parish pulls out the same decorations and they put them in the exact same place, the same tapestries. Oh, we're going to put some river rocks over there with a purple swash of cloth and, you know, Jesus died.
And dunk your hands in the holy water. It's not going to be there.
Exactly. You know what really struck me not too long ago? You know, the miracle of Good Friday is that he didn't call it a miracle. It's so jaw-dropping and soul-stirring, right? That here he is, here is the incarnate word. Here he is. He's been not just, I mean, he's being destroyed. I mean, like, the Romans didn't invent crucifixion, the Persians did, but the Romans perfected it. Like, they can torture you within an inch of your life. And here he is being just destroyed on a cross, humiliated for all to see. Pure power, the incarnate son. And if we would have had eyes to see, you know how like dogs can hear a dog whistle? Like, if we had the spiritual, like, you know, dog ears, if we had eyes to see, if you're standing at Calvary that day, what we would have seen were legions and legions and legions of angels, mm-hmm. all flanking Calvary, hands on swords sheathed, waiting for him to say a word, mm-hmm. where they would have appeared and just destroyed the Roman legion in a millisecond. And he didn't call it a miracle. And it was well within his purview to do so, and he didn't do it. And when you stop and consider that, it really puts suffering in context. Mm-hmm. Because the next time that you're suffering, you have a God. It says in Revelation, you know, the Lamb who was slain is sitting on the throne. It's not like it's just washed up, you know, had a makeover, you know, just had a manicure Jesus who's sitting on the throne in heaven, the right side of the Father. It's the Lamb who was slain. I mean, he still bears the marks of victory and crucifixion. And to say the next time you're suffering, when you go to God, to know that you have a God who understands suffering and who endured it. Because if he would have called on a miracle and jumped off the cross and the Romans were destroyed, and that he just, at that moment, he decided to ascend in front of everybody, you know, like a Las Vegas spectacle, then the next time that you're suffering and you go to Jesus and you're like, "Lord, I need you to be with me." And he'd say, "I understand." And then all of a sudden there'd be a spirit of resentment inside of us. He'd say, "No, you don't understand." Mm-hmm. I mean, when the going got tough, you got going. Like, you don't understand suffering. What are you talking about? You know, like, you're such a hypocrite. He didn't. Mm-mm. So you know that no matter how grave, how serious, how sinister, no matter what you're going through, that literally that your Savior has experienced that in the human form, in the flesh, and he endured it. And by his grace will help you endure it. And that's why, like, when I think we hear these phrases, you know, like, well, you have to offer it up and you have to, you know, match your suffering to his. And it's it, like there's a certain, you know what I'm talking about? There's just certain phrases in the nomenclature that just make me nuts. You know, well, offer it up. But when you actually really pray through it, it does make a lot of sense. You need to offer it up. You need to offer this to the Lord, and you need to ask him to come and meet you where you are, because it's about mercy. Mm. You know, it really is. That's why, you know, we were talking about Father Agostino's book, you know, from Through Ave, the very first entry in the Lent book that he wrote. He's so talented. He's such a great writer. He's just so accessible. But the very first entry, he's talking about the Spirit drove Jesus into the desert. And the word in Greek is drove him. I mean, it's the same word that they use for, like, drives out demons. I mean, it actually says, like Jesus was propelled into the desert. He didn't go there because he was looking to have a good time. He didn't go because that's what he wanted to do and had nothing else to do. He was following the Spirit. But I think we all need to be propelled into the desert. And I think that's why the church in her wisdom keeps Lent a season and not a day and not a week. The church knows that, you know what, we get spiritually lazy, we get physically lazy, emotionally lazy, you know, we get selfish, we get self-involved, we get narcissistic and navel-gazing. And the church in her love and wisdom says, it's going to take a few weeks to undo this knot. We're going to change the music, we're going to get rid of the water, we're going to throw out some purple, we're going to try and wake you and jostle you out of your spiritual lethargy and try to get you back in the right relationship. And once we do that, we're going to party for a few weeks because this is where God wants you to be.
Yeah. How do we do that with families? You and your wife wrote a wonderful book for Ave, all about a not quite holy family can somehow try to work towards holiness. We use your One Sunday at a Time book every Sunday morning when we're having donuts after Mass to try to really get into the reading. So tell us what a family can do when they're in Lent.
I think you really have to look at it in a seasonal way. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Lent's a season, right? Ordinary time is the ordinary time of the season. I think for you, like for you and Tommy, you know, I've known you for years and years, you know, you have littles and you have to approach it differently. I think parents of littles have to be really, really gentle with yourself and really merciful with yourself and to say, you know what, we're doing our best. And some weeks it's going to just, everything's going to click. And other weeks it's just going to be a debacle and it's just not going to go well. But I think that heaven rejoices in the effort. Rejoices in the effort of during donuts that you're trying to work through readings, trying to figure out a way to distill that to your kids to pull that strand, that theme out. You know, that was the idea of, like, with the book, is to help people find the theme of the readings, you know? As they move from littles into those, you know, those pre-adolescent, adolescent years, I think it really becomes about carving out time, you know, where it might not always be glorious, you know, the great discussions, but to really carve out the time where you start to talk to them like little adults, like younger adults, where you're asking them more questions. It becomes less about distilling information as it is about helping them process the information, right? Mm-hmm. So carving out the time and saying, well, maybe Sunday mornings work on the littles, but as they got a little bit older, you know, we're going to make a Sunday dinner thing or make it a Sunday evening thing, you know, where we have a little more time and maybe we'll read the readings together, or maybe, you know, like we'll take turns reading them, or we're going to spend more time interceding for one another, you know? And then as they get to be teenagers, I have almost 22-year-old, I have a couple of teenagers, I have, you know, fourth graders, we're kind of like across the gamut right now. Being the teenagers, it really is about letting them take the lead. You know, you ask that question, you sort of let them lead and facilitate the conversation. Okay, so you heard that reading, you heard the homily, you know, what did that do for you? What did that take you? Did it strike anything? I mean, did you zone out? Like what happened? But really letting them explain, if they zone out, to justify, you know, but to let them feel as though they can sort of interpolate what God is saying on their own time frame. Mm-hmm. The challenge is not to put them on your timeline. Mm. And if I have to say, like, there's one thing that has been the hardest thing for me as a control freak, but my wife is very gracious and saintly and she's great at it, is letting each individual personality and each individual kid have their own walk and their own timeline. Mm. You know, and I think the hard part, because as a former youth minister, is you want to get every kid in the 4 years you have and the 7 years you have, and you want to get into heaven as close as you can. But realizing that everyone's coming in with different stuff, with different families, different history, different struggles, different temptations. And if Old Navy teaches us anything, one size doesn't fit anybody. Mm-hmm. It's not one size fits all. We have to get better as a church and as a people, especially like even as parents, at letting your kids spiritually develop at their own rate. And that doesn't mean you can't coach them up, you can't push them, you can't challenge them, and you should, and hold them accountable, but also just to rejoice in the journey. And I think so often it's like we're so obsessed with the destination that we don't rejoice in the journey. Yeah, I don't like long, you know, cross-country car trips either, when, you know, every 15 minutes someone has to pee and you're trying to find the cleanest bathroom you can on the interstate. But the reality is that there is a joy in that journey. And I'll say, you know, as a parent of older kids, like, I would give anything to go back to some of those trips, mm-hmm. the trips that made me want to pull my hair out, but they were glorious and great. And I think that if we treat in our parenting with our kids, we treat them in different seasons and we approach the seasons differently on how we as parents pastorally distill the faith, I think that when they get older and begin to start their own families, we have done two things. One, we've done our best to try to usher them towards heaven. But two, we've modeled for them in a very pedagogical way. We've modeled for them what successful discipleship looks like. Because, you know, even St. Paul says, hey, you know, when you were a child, I taught you like you were a child. You're not a child anymore. So now I'm going to treat you differently. Mm-hmm. You know, he says at one point, he says, hey, like when I was among the Jews, I spoke like a Jew. When I was among the Gentiles, I spoke like a Gentile. When I was among those that didn't know the law of Moses, I acted as though I didn't know the law of Moses, but I never forgot it, never abandoned it. And St. Paul, he gives these little glimpses in his epistles where he takes on different approaches in how he disciples and evangelizes people based upon who he's speaking to. He never leaves the gospel. He's never heretical. He never abandons it. But he's just trying to say, but you have to be really thoughtful about where the person you're speaking to is spiritually and how to get them from point A to point C.
Mm-hmm. I love that advice because I think we sometimes try to accelerate it. We did a bean activity a couple Lents ago where it's like every sacrifice you make, you put a bean in a jar. And then on Easter, it's going to turn into jelly beans. And
I like that.
It's a great idea, but not for a four-year-old who doesn't know what it means to sacrifice. Now, halfway through first grade, if she does like the slightest sacrifice, it's an announcement. Guys, I sacrificed my spot on the couch for Claire. And we're like, okay, well, now we got to find the happy medium between I don't know what sacrifice is and I need everyone to applaud my sacrifices. So we're working on it. But I tried to accelerate it. Like, oh, let's do this really cool spiritual activity too soon, because I thought that's like what you had to do. You said something at the very beginning that I want to go back to, because I think it's a great way to conclude the conversation, where we look at somebody else's Lent, or we compare ourselves to somebody else's holiness. And like, that can kill our Lenten experience. That can ruin our Easter. Like, oh gosh, like their dresses were prettier than mine, or their family's meal was bigger, or, you know, they look like they really had a good Lent that was fruitful. If somebody comes up to you the first week of Lent and says, Mark, it's already really crappy, it's not going how I want it to go, how do you encourage them to not compare it to someone else's? How do you give them a boost in the arm to actually try to take the remainder of Lent and dig into it with everything that they have?
If it was me, those are those moments that I feel like God puts in front of you to really be bold. Those moments never happen at a convenient time. They don't. They happen when you have to pee and the, and the seatbelt light goes on and you're going to circle the runway for 30 minutes. They happen when you're in a rush to get home and start dinner and you're in the checkout line and someone stops you. That's just, those are the moments. It's never going to be convenient. And whenever it's not convenient to offer the gospel or to offer love to somebody, for me, that's like when I have to spiritually be aware enough where I feel like the Holy Spirit is just shooting flares in the sky, being like, yeah, it's not convenient. It's go time. If someone was to come up to me and say that, I think I would, I don't care where I was. I don't care if I was in line at the DMV, if I was, you know, at a checkout line at, you know, at the store, if I was waiting for coffee, I would just literally stop, lock eyes, remind them of how valuable and how important they are to God. Put a hand on their shoulder and start spontaneously praying. Mm-hmm. Now I know that that sends a shudder of fear through people. I understand that. And it can be very socially awkward. It really, really can. But I think in those moments, God's calling for boldness, because if someone has the spiritual aptitude and awareness to share something like that with you, that tells you A, that they trust you, and B, they're in need, that they're in need of God's mercy, they're in need of hope at that moment. Secondarily, I would also offer, you know, that the longest, this is just being nerdy and geeky, the longest dialogue, Katie, do you know the longest conversation Jesus has with anybody in all four gospels?
No.
Do you recall it offhand?
Mm-mm.
The longest conversation he has with any one person in the four gospels is the Samaritan woman at the well.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing he does, I mean, she's going to the well, it's new, like, you know, that. First thing he does is he reveals her shame to her. He reveals to her sin. He's like, you've had five husbands, and the guy you're with right now is not your husband, you're just living with him. And, you know, you're thinking, if he's just going to be play nice God, he could have pretended he didn't know all that stuff. He could have just, you know, just loved her where she was at, pretended he didn't know it. But instead, and that always struck me, I was like, why is he revealing her sin there? Like, that's really embarrassing, right? It's for this poor woman.
Mm-hmm.
He revealed it because he is mercy. He revealed it because he loved her and he wanted to get her back in the right relationship. And if you and I are aware enough, even a few days in the Lent, a week or two in the Lent, 3 weeks, halfway through Lent, Palm Sunday for crying out loud, who cares? If we're aware enough and be like, this isn't going well. I said I was going to give this up. It hasn't worked. I said I was going to try harder. I haven't. I said I'd be more patient. I lost it. I said I was going to clean up my language. Sure haven't. You know, whatever it is. If we are willing to acknowledge our shame, no matter what day it is, no matter how far in the season we are, that Jesus literally, I mean, he's right there and mercy is just waiting. But he wants us to know he knows, not because we're that bad, but because we're designed to be that good.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we can acknowledge that and then proactively do something about it, the more we open ourselves for the Spirit to proactively do something about it.
Mm.
The disconnect becomes where we want to just kind of be like with the junk closet. We want to pretend that our house is clean when the reality is our house is in shambles. And we need Jesus to come in like the divine, you know, cleaning person and just, you know, just go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Lent's about. Like, Lord, open the front door, reveal your own shame, show him all your crap. Let him go to work. Let him do what he does. He's a savior, but we'd rather keep him as a teacher
mm-hmm.
or a philosopher, you know, or a server, because it's a lot safer, because that doesn't require us to change. And Lent is all about change.
Mm. Such a good word. Mark, it's always great to chat with you. Tell us about your book, One Sunday at a Time. I know we've got two volumes of it.
Yes. As many people know, the church breaks our readings into three cycles, 3 years of readings. So we had the first cycle come out last year. Now we're in cycle B. Well, I am. So we're going to be hearing from now through Christ the King in the end of November. We'll be hearing from predominantly St. Mark and St. John. So the new version, Avi does a great job. Actually, I have a copy right here. It's hardcover. It feels really good. It's beautiful. They do such a great job with it. The idea really, Katie, like you were mentioning earlier, it's just if we can take 10 minutes a week, it's 2 pages per Sunday, sometimes 2.5 pages, 10 minutes a week to read about the read. So when you show up to Mass or you're coming out of Mass, you're hearing these readings that are sometimes 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years old, right? 2,000 years old. You're hearing readings that are using references and phrases that are no longer used. They're taking place in parts of the world we couldn't find on a map. And the idea is, if we just can understand the basic theme, why the church put these readings together, some behind the scenes kind of stuff, like, hey, this is why Jesus seems so angry right here. This is why Moses is losing his mind. This is why the prophet always has a bad day. Like, if you kind of extrapolate some of those things and understand how the dots connect, it really makes the readings come to life. And now your whole first half of Mass is not based on whether or not Father hits a grand slam with his homily. You know what to listen for, you know what to take away from it. And then each week I just kind of throw in, hey, here's some questions. You can journal if you're reading on your own. You can discuss with your husband, your wife, your women's group, your men's group over, you know, a cup of coffee or a beer or whatever. And here's sort of a challenge for the week. Here's what's one small, practical little spiritual exercise that I can try the next couple of days to live out the theme of the readings, but more importantly, just to live out my discipleship so that my faith is not just 1 hour a week on Sunday, but my faith is a lived experience the other 167 hours a week.
It's a fantastic resource. We love it in our house.
You're so sweet.
Mark, always good to chat with you. Thanks for taking the time, my friend. Mark always does a fantastic job of reminding us of these greater ideas. He's such a dear friend and such wonderful insights. I really appreciated getting to chat with him. If you're enjoying Ave Explorers, I want to tell you two things that you can do that help the show. You can give our show a rating and a review over in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can share the show on social media. If you go follow Ave Maria Press over on Instagram, every week when our episodes drop, we post a little reel of a short pull clip. And so if you've liked this episode, maybe if you hear that reel, you see that little pull clip over on Instagram, share it. Share it in your story. Send a link to your friends. I think Lent can be as easy or as hard as we want it to be. And sometimes we have to lower the threshold to these good spiritual options that we have. Here at Ave Explorers, we want to make it as easy as possible for you to dive into this incredible book by Father Agostino, Made for Heaven. This podcast is just one component. Father Agostino has also filmed an incredible video series that is completely available for free, over on Ave Maria Press's website. So you've got this podcast, listen in your car, watch these videos. Maybe you're a teacher, maybe you're running an RCIA program, maybe you're just a mom or dad, not just a mom or dad, but you're a parent who wants to go a little deeper with your kids, spouses who want to do something together in the Lenten season that's spiritually edifying and formative. Ave has given us this complete program from top to bottom, the book, the videos, and the podcast to really help lead you into the Lenten season with purpose. Maybe that's really the name of the game here, purpose. Our Lent should be purposeful, not self-help, not just a program, but purposeful. A purposeful thought about, okay, what am I doing this for? I'm doing this to change my understanding of what I'm made for, which is ultimately to be unified with Jesus forever in heaven. And I'm able to maybe have that experience one day because of what he did on the cross, which we, of course, celebrate the victory of that in the Easter season. And Lent is getting ready for all of that. We're grateful that you listened with us today. We've got some incredible episodes continuing to come out for Ave Explorers. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss anything. Next week, we'll be back with Claire and Mike Couchy, a lovely married couple who live in Dallas, Texas, and run an incredible ministry called Finding Philothea. They'll talk to us about Lent as a couple, Lent as married people who want to dive into this pursuit of heaven together within their vocation. So make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss anything. And thanks for being with us today here on Ave Explorers.